Good evening. This is Mae Bressel. The title of this broadcast is World Watchers. It's program number 764, July 28th, 1986. Last week, at the end of the broadcast, the last 5 minutes, I was talking about Franklin Camber, a gentleman who runs a mercenary school in Alabama. Now he was arrested on firebombing charges in San Bernardino, California. I'm going to continue that now, and for the next 5 or 6 weeks, I'm going to lead you through maybe a complicated route, but maybe it won't be so complicated for long listeners, and try to tie together a lot of things that are happening in the news today that center around people like Franklin Camber, the mercenary schools, and the decision of the President of the United States to now send military troops into 50 states of the United States for the purpose of drug control, which is a real coup d'etat, and also to overthrow democratic countries in the world, starting with Bolivia and then India, to assure that $80 billion drug traffic a year that is taking place, with people like Ronald Reagan and Henry Kissinger being the king and the decision makers for these policies. Before I get into that, I just want to tell you about a book that's available, a listener to World Watchers got for me. It's called The Pope and the New Apocalypse, The Holy War Against Family Planning, by Dr. Stephen Mumford. This book is free. You write to the Center of Research for Research on Population and Security, P.O. Box 13067, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. In addition to it being free, when you get it, this book, it gives you the address and the cost of another book called American Democracy and the Vatican, Population Growth and National Security. The president uses national security easily when he brings the troops into the 50 states. That book is $7.95, and the address for ordering that book is included with the one that is free. The interesting part about this book is the naming of Knights of Malta, the realization of the intrusion of the Roman Empire upon the decisions in this country, the close link to the Reagan administration, and how it is influencing the world and is influencing us, and the power it has that it shouldn't have as a religion. The Catholic Church can tell Catholics what to do. The problem with Mr. Scalia, the new Chief Justice that will be appointed to the United States, speaking about birth control, is that he's against contraceptives of any kind, and he is the most devout Catholic, or the first Italian Catholic, to be on the Supreme Court. Now, he takes his orders from Rome, but he can't be one of a team telling us what to do on that matter, because the Roman Empire doesn't run our Supreme Court. He can tell Catholics what to do, but I wonder about the legality of them telling everyone to do what the Catholics do or don't do what they can't do. And I just wonder how long it will take for people to catch on, but this Dr. Mumford sees the relationship of the Roman Empire and the Vatican to what is happening in the world, and I think it's very important to get a hold of it. I appreciate the copy I have. Now, Judge Kaufman was appointed by Ronald Reagan to head what was called the President's Commission on Organized Crime, which is a farce. Of course, he wouldn't go into Paul Laxalt or Raymond Donovan and some of Reagan's cronies. Judge Kaufman, who headed this commission, was the same judge who prosecuted Ethel and Julius Rosenberg. His assistant in the prosecution was a young lawyer named Roy Cohn, who's now in Maryland dying of AIDS. Roy Cohn has been linked with drug people and narcotics traffickers all of his political and legal life and represented the biggest of them. He also was, I'll say past tense because he's for all purposes dead, on the board of Western Goals with John Singlob, who ties into this story of drug dealers and cocaine traffickers also. And Reagan is making the world safe for those people and wiping out the competition. Now, the President's Commission on Organized Crime gave a report and in one sentence or two describes the mentality that feeds Ronald Reagan's preconceived thought of what he's going to do anyway. The report said, in quotes, "An airborne, amphibious, and overland invasion of the United States by the drug mafia is underway," the commission said in its final report on narcotics traffic. "The Joint Chiefs of Staff, the military, should be instructed by the highest levels of government. The hostile or destructive action from within or without, overt or covert, shall include the invasion of this country by drug smugglers. Now, that is so childish. The drug smugglers have been invited into this country. There's no invasion. But that because he recommended that the Joint Chief of Staff get involved, Reagan was more than willing then to counteract and get the military going on this very matter. And he responded appropriately for Ronald Reagan. The Rocky Mountain News, this is out of Colorado, Denver, Colorado, a good place for drug trafficking, had an article June the 8th, Presidential Directive Declares Drug Threat to National Security. President Reagan has authorized step-up military action to thwart drug trafficking by signing a secret directive that declared drugs a national security threat. Where's the secret if he overtly says it's a threat? Goodness knows what else is in there. This article says, for the first time, the United States government specifically states that the international drug trade is a national security concern because of its ability to destabilize democratic allies through the corruption of police and judicial institutions. Can you imagine the nerve of saying that it destabilizes democratic allies? We put in the Shah of Iran, which was not a democratic ally, and Mr. Pinochet, who's not a democratic ally, and the team down, Mr. Banzer, Hugo Banzer, and the drug team in Bolivia that are not democratic allies. The Democrats, when they get into power, are not allowed to make the same profit that the fascists make in drug making. That's why Ronald Reagan has targeted Bolivia and India as the first targets to send in troops if he can to eradicate drugs. The Democratic allies don't join us with their fascist thinking and mentality, and the people that we've put into the drug trafficking are not the Democratic allies. It hasn't hurt the Democratic allies. It has hurt the fascists who lose control of their country, just as the Chinese government and the Chiang Kai-shek family lost a good hunk of drug traffic when they were forced to become somewhat democratic. The drug traffic is a national security threat to our banks now. They're all going broke because we're so used to the profits that the banks are collapsing and we have to keep the flow of drugs coming in. And what Ronald Reagan's going to do is use the military selectively to bring in the people he wants to deal the drugs with. And when you get another administration, as I said, when Jimmy Carter ran against Ronald Reagan, he had another team of drug dealers, and what we're seeing is a drug war, but now the drug war is coming close to home. Reagan defined the drug trade, as I say, as a national security threat. That gives him the entree to do anything he wants. Washington Post had a story June 9th, Military Role and Drug Fight Outlined. The U.S. military personnel will be allowed to help U.S. agencies and foreign governments plan assaults on narcotic traffickers, equip police force, and transport them to attack sites under a new presidential directive because drug traffic is now a national threat. The secret national security decision directive, revealed Saturday by Vice President Bush, will permit the armed forces to dedicate personnel, equipment, radar-equipped airplanes, satellites to fight drug traffic, and so forth. Military assistance against narcotics has been limited mostly to training U.S. and foreign personnel to provide on loan to these various countries. But now, because of the big drug traffic, Caspar Weinberg and the military are going to use the armed forces. Morton Halperin, director of the Washington Office of American Civil Liberties Union, said he is concerned that involving the armed forces and drug control might lead to covert activity such as surveillance of U.S. citizens that would be illegal under ordinary law enforcement procedures. The military should stay out of law enforcement. They're not trained in it. And when Ronald Reagan was governor of California and Ed Meese was his advisor, they used the military, and the Pentagon was used by Richard Nixon, to illegally take pictures and surveillance of ordinary citizens, law-abiding citizens. It was used in the United States before. The papers were supposed to be destroyed. They were not destroyed, and they were put into the hands of a computer in Los Angeles to be transferred to John Singlaub and an organization of Western Gold, also Roy Cohn and Admiral Thomas Moore, and so forth, the same military that will invade this country under the guise of drug traffic. And the danger of coming to American citizens is here. Mr. Halperin is speaking too late because the directive already says what they're going to do in using the military, not just training them. July the 4th, on the anniversary of our country's founding, our Freedom Day, that we celebrated so gallantly, disgustingly, I should say, The Sacramento Bee had a story, Military May Aid 50-State Drug War. Attorney General Edwin Meese said Thursday that a major drug eradication program is in store in all 50 states. Now, anyone they suspect of knowing a drug dealer or having drugs and so forth can be attacked by the military, and this is the first time the military may take an active role in the United States in 50 states. The military participation in such a program would appear to be the first since President Reagan's April 8th directive. Now, he didn't wait much time, did he? April 8th said that drugs are a national security threat. And July the 4th, he says, we're going to put the military into 50 states of the United States. Now, if Reagan couldn't use terrorism as an excuse for a takeover of this country and for the finalized coup, he can always use the military and a drug war, but he has the police state ready and lined up in 50 states to do what they want. This Sacramento Bee says the directive classified drug trade as national security and allowed the stepped-up use of military force to stop the drug flow. Formerly, they were used for Operation Delta 9 last year for marijuana, but now the directive has gone out, and last year, drug traffic wasn't national security. The president slipped that in April, and by July 4th of this year, the troops can be in any state at any time they want. Now, not separate from Reagan's goal to do that, which he did in the 70s, as I say, went into the computers of John Singlau, I just want to read a column written by Conrad Eig for The Guardian on an arrest of some important people, which I mentioned before. I haven't had time to delve into this because it is so vast, but I will get into it after I complete the Franklin Camper series because they parallel and are part of this whole series, but I'll take that as a second part and go with the Franklin Camper story first because I believe my order is the priority. This article by Conrad Eig, who is an expert on these subjects, a very good writer, is titled Journalists Charge Calero Planned Assassinations. I mentioned Calero a few weeks ago, but I'll refresh your mind and go into the details of the story. The list of defendants in a $23.8 million civil suit was filed in Miami May 29th, and it reads like a who's who among the Nicaraguan Contras and their supporters. FDN leader Adolfo Calero, General John Singlaub of the World Anti-Communist League, former CIA Deputy Director Ted Shackley. Now, Singlaub and Shackley go back to the Vietnam War, working with William Colby in the Phoenix Program, and when that war was over, Colby was brought to the United States to head up the Central Intelligence Agency, and a few weeks ago, I was telling about Litton Industry being turned over at Fort Detrick, Maryland, that Air Force combine, to the laboratories that did biological and chemical warfare by Richard Nixon. And I said at that point, the war came home to direct the chemicals and the biological and the intensity of the military and the CIA to people at home. And those were the years when the COINTEL program was unleashed, the Operation Chaos, and so forth. Now, Singlaub and Shackley, of course, are part of the Vietnam-Southeast Asia conflict that came home, and they're involved in a lot more, which would take a lifetime to study, but right now they've been indicted, along with these anti-Castro Cubans and others. Andy Messing of the National Defense Council Foundation is one of the defendants. John Hull, owner of a ranch in northern Costa Rica, allegedly used as a Contra base, as well as 25 other Contras, exiled Cubans. Oh, there's an airplane going overhead. Can you hear it? There's a window outside the studio, and you can hear this airplane going overhead. Maybe that's the military with the drugs. I better hide them. Oh, boy. Okay. back to the subject. John Hull is one of the defendants, owner of a ranch in northern Costa Rica, allegedly used as a Contra base, is one of the defendants, and 25 other Contras, exiled Cubans, alleged Colombian cocaine smugglers that collaborate with the Contras. And Colombia, as against the Bolivian, is very important because there is this drug war between the states, and now we've sent in our troops to attack Bolivia as a very good starter and for very good reasons. The suit charges that Calero helped plan an assassination attempt against ARDE leader Eden Pastora in May of 1984. Pastora has since stopped fighting the Sandinistas, and he's moved to Costa Rica permanently. They planned to kill him, and about 7 journalists were killed in the room. He was injured at the time. Pastora had refused to join the CIA-funded Contra Alliance called the FDN. This bombing was allegedly carried out by an exiled Libyan, Amak Galil. And Libya is very important into this story of Camper and the connections to the Sikhs and the Sikh assassination teams, and I'll get back to it later. But Libyan Amal Galil is important. He was posing as a journalist. He had previously worked for the Chilean secret police, and that, again, is very important in this story, the links of Chile, Dina, Mr. Pinochet, and the drug-dealing connections of South America and the fascists to Henry Kissinger, who was in charge of the coup with Richard Nixon that made Pinochet possible, put in the secret police force, Dina, and their agent, this Libyan, Amak Galil, was the journalist, posing as a journalist, the one who did the bombing, where so many were killed and others were hurt. Other defendants are charged with gun running, violating U.S. Neutrality Act, by aiding the Contras, and smuggling large amount of cocaine into the United States to supplement the Contras' income. Now, while the president has declared war in 50 states with the U.S. military, one thing that makes it possible is allowing the flow of cocaine into this country, so the military, just put aside the police and regular law enforcement, can enter and get their feet right into it, because it is a national security matter, and the president has now allowed the Pentagon to move that way. The suit was brought by journalists Tony Avergan and Martha Honey. Avergan was severely injured in that assassination attempt. Avergan and Honey received numerous death threats while investigating the bombing. Trying to find out who bombed them and killed their friends, they've been getting death threats. The civil suit alleged that one of their key sources, by the name of David X, was kidnapped and tortured and killed in 1985 after the Contras, these are our CIA people like Theodore Shackley and General John Singlaub, after the Contras saw him talking to gringo journalists. David X had allegedly informed Honey and Avergan about a Contra plot that was going to blow up the United States Embassy in Costa Rica. This is another agent provocateur thing we do to blame the other side. The suit charges that the bombing was to be blamed on the Nicaraguan government in order to generate increased funding and support from U.S. sources. The last time we saw a sample of that was the Berlin bombing, where 2 Americans died, and that was an excuse for the United States Army to start attacking Gaddafi in Libya and bomb 2 cities in Libya. The article concludes, the journalist's complaint also alleged that the attack was meant to murder U.S. Ambassador Louis Tams, T-A-M-B-S, reputed Colombian cocaine smuggler Pablo Escobar, also a defendant in the civil suit, is said to have offered $1 million bounty to kill Tam. As ambassador to Colombia, Tams had angered the drug smugglers by working to prosecute the drug kingpins. Now, if this is confusing for you, the Contras, who just received $100 million from our Congress, had planned, and they knew about this. This case was in the open and in the news before the $100 million was allocated to them again. They wanted to kill an American ambassador in the U.S. Embassy in Costa Rica and blame Nicaragua as an excuse for us to go in there. And they wanted to kill the ambassador because he was trying to prosecute drug dealers in Colombia and the cocaine for this operation that flows into the United States by the CIA and by the anti-Castro Cubans and by the various elements of the Somoza Army and so forth is what is flooding the United States with drugs. The contradictions are horrendous, and how Ronald Reagan gets away with this, I really don't know. There's going to be a filibuster in the Senate on the money for the Contras. I hope this comes up. Now, to get to the area that connects, in a few weeks I'll connect it to these people. I want to continue where I left off last week. I was quoting an article from the Los Angeles Times, Wednesday, May 21st, titled, 5 Arrested in Firebombing of Car. And this is about Franklin Camper, who was arrested in Birmingham, Alabama, who runs a mercenary school in Alabama that is well known and sends killers all over the world. And he's been picked up in this country and gotten off all possible prosecution or indictment before. He's a selected darling of the FBI and the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. But this time he couldn't get away with it, and they did plant an informer in his camp and picked up his activities, and he was arrested for them. I mentioned last week the arrest was because of an action that took place in San Bernardino County, and it's a 42-page criminal complaint issued May 20th, 1986, and it involved Franklin Camper and an undercover agent who posed as a trainee at his camp, who came out as part of a four-man mission to California, and two bodyguards hid in a tree with rifles, and the women had guns in their bras, and they almost shot the daughter of one of the women who had hired them to come to California. These men were hired to bother, harass, or harm, and the details are, except for firebombing, aren't really out in the open yet. But two ladies who teach nursery school quit one or two of the five nursery schools that were owned by these other parties, Mrs. Wyckoff and Mrs. Hamilton. And they were taken to the National Relations Board or the State Labor Board about their being fired at the school. And so the people who owned the school turned to Franklin Camper for help. Now, it seems awfully ridiculous to spend so much money to bring him there, where for a little bit of a fee, they could have settled it in California. Special Agent Tom Miller of the Treasury Department of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms said that they watched television segments of Camper on 60 Minutes, the ladies. The excuse for using Camper was that they saw him on 60 Minutes, he was on Phil Donahue also, and they were interested because he said he conducted investigation for businesses and he really wanted to help people solve their problems. Those are the quotes that he gave. So they called him in Alabama, and this national publicity. So he comes out to California. He agreed to come to California, and he told the special agent he was hired by the two ladies to locate and identify people who were giving them harassing telephone calls at night. There was some vandalism at the school and these phone calls. Now, Franklin Camper is so important into the scene of working with people who had the failed invasion of Dominica, with the Klan, the Nazis, the Sikh assassins, with the FBI, with the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. His contacts are endless. So the very fact that they say to him, I want you to see who's bothering our telephone and harassing us at night is a little bit ridiculous. There is more to this story than we saw him on television and we wanted to know who was making these calls. The telephone company will put a tap on your call and locate them very easily if you're really getting nuisance calls. You don't pay for four people to come from Alabama and not such a motley crew. So Camper flew to San Diego. The tickets were paid by the school. They used a rental car. The motel was paid by the school. And he was joined by two of his agents, Mr. Cuneo and Mr. Hedgecorth and Mr. Johnson. And they drove from Alabama to Southern California. And so they allegedly were looking for people who were bothering Mrs. Wyckoff and Hamilton, as if you need four such people to see who's making these telephone calls. And Camper told the school owners that he talked with that he would not be a real assistance to these particular people. That's what he said afterwards, that he didn't intend to be a real assistance, but he left two people there as bodyguards to watch the Wyckoff home when he returned to Alabama. And then he returns again back to California. And a special agent, Roger Guthrie, attended Camper's school and posed as a student there and heard discussion of possible violation of federal firearms laws. And he heard the three men, Cuneo and Johnson and Hedgecorth, discuss a proposal that was put up by Camper that each man would make $1,000 and go to California to do unconventional action. And the reason this article of Camper's role is so important is that he's been caught at the nuclear plant, Crystal River, in Florida in March of 81, and he was never arrested or indicted. He was photographed on the TV news with another man, Mr. Lisenby, and they had a gun. They were going out to murder somebody in Miami. He never was indicted. So now he's out for unconventional action in the United States again. And then the people that went out there were told that it wasn't going to be a very nice thing. It was more than unconventional action, it was going to harm people. And they knew that when they went to California. The ladies gave him between $3,000 and $5,000 to pay the expenses of Camper while his team were in California. And Wyckoff and Hamilton insisted that they themselves didn't participate in the firebombings. They've been indicted for hiring Camper. and that they didn't know about it. And the woman who was present when a lot of the conversation went on was the daughter of Mrs. Wyckoff. Her name is Shirley Wright. And I mentioned last week that the mother, Mrs. Wyckoff, has been charged as of July 18th, 1986, with trying to plot to have her daughter murdered because she would be the sole witness. The men were paid in cash. And in order to get Mr. Camper off and the others off, she had to murder her own daughter, and she's been indicted for that. So that's the activities they do at home. Her daughter had said that she met two men at the house, and they allegedly were supposed to be bodyguards. They were carrying firearms and weapons, the men that her mother had arranged to bring, the excuse being that their phone was being bugged with nuisance calls. And you bring four people to California armed with weapons in their bras and pants and everywhere else, and it's a little questionable about the purposes. He must have known it was going to be more. Now, this past May 31st, almost 2 months ago, there was an article in Wire Service all over the country. Five Sikhs held an alleged bomb plot. Group were have targeted Air India 747. This is a new plan to kill off people in Air India, about 300 people. They were going to leave Kennedy Airport at 8:15. John Kennedy Airport in New York City, flight 110 on a Friday, and they were going by way of London to India, and the celebration in India that they were remembering with a bomb on Air India was what they called Genocide Week, commemorating the time when Mrs. Gandhi ordered the invasion of the Golden Temple and 1,200 Sikhs were killed. True, 1,200 were killed, and it isn't fair, but hardly anyone on Air India going down, 300 this time and 300 last time, had very much to do with politics in India. People should be aware of politics in other countries, but they're not. And these Sikhs were held for this bombing plot as of May 31st. Now, the chronology of the Sikh terrorism and the links to Franklin Camper and the power they have is important, and I just want to highlight a few of these dates in chronological order, which I like to do. And it's hard to remember their names. I may not pronounce them right, and I won't spell them for you. You won't remember them anyway, but I can print them on a type sheet, so we learn to know some of them. Now, just a year ago, May the 5th, 1985, five Sikhs were arrested with plans to murder Rajiv Gandhi in the United States. And those Sikhs were trained by Franklin Camper in Alabama, the same Camper that was arrested in Riverside just this past May 19th. Five of them were arrested, and they had been training with Rajiv Gandhi in Alabama. May the 6th, 1985, there was an article about their training camp also in New Jersey. 1 month later, the Khalistani terrorists, with links to Babar Khalasa, blew up Air India, where 300 people were killed. That was after the arrest on the plan to kill Rajiv Gandhi. June 23rd, 300 were killed. April of 1985, also, there were two prominent Sikhs, Parmar and Lakhbir Singh, deterred Ontario, Canada, fomenting violence. They had protests against Indian embassy in Ottawa, May the 3rd, 1985, just before Rajiv Gandhi would have been murdered and a month before the plane went down. Now, May 19th this year, Franklin Camper was arrested. As I said, he works allegedly with the FBI and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and there's a suggestion in some articles that he's now singing about his former employers and the Canadian government, and this is why there have been recent arrests and the Canadians have decided to clean up their act regarding the Sikh activities in Toronto and in Vancouver and so forth. May 27th, a week after Camper's arrest, an undercover agent for the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the Khalistani, they had a plot to bomb the Canadian Exposition in Vancouver. They were arrested. They were going to Los Angeles to get weapons to smuggle into Canada, to purchase rocket launchers, plans to destroy power lines. And also May the 27th, there was an arrest of four members of the Sikh Youth Federation, and that's an important group, like the Hitler Youth. They attempted to murder Milkhand Singh and Mr. Sidhu, visiting from Punjab, and he is another Sikh of a different faction, and that's important to get this difference, which I'll explain in the weeks to come. The shooting attempt was in Campbell River on Vancouver Island, right outside of Courtenay, not very far from where I have my property up there in Vancouver Island. There were four shots. He was forced off the road and important people from the Youth Federation, the Young Sikh movement, were held responsible and were arrested in Vancouver. The headquarters are in Vancouver. I'll take a one-minute break and go back to the chronology of the Sikh arrests and terrorism and the relation to Franklin Camper. And then if we have time this week, or if not, next week, take it down to Ecuador and South America and link it to the Mossad, Israeli intelligence, and the Afghanistan-Pakistan connections. There's a lot of connections. I'm leading to them, but I want to go through these terrorism arrests in Canada and the United States before I go on to the next part. As I say, we'll take a one-minute break and continue with the story of the violence training also in Alabama.